Okay. So I got all the mini projects that, you know, any of you who did the mini projects, they got returned. There's one point about them. Some of you basically did not seem to apparently add to the report the evidence that you actually played with the problems that you made. Okay. And if that wasn't there, then, you know, the points were deducted. If you actually ran them, but you somehow did not put it in the report because that would take too many sheets, you know, let me know. And then I'll, you know, send me an email, and then I'll tell you how to go about it then. Okay. Otherwise, I guess it's mostly basically people who did it seem to have done pretty much all the parts. So that's regarding the mini project. I guess there's one more homework that needs to be graded and given back, and then there'll at least be one more set. I just have to figure out what's the right timing, which somehow will include the reinforcement learning and the statistical learning parts. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So today we are going to basically continue talking about statistical learning, and last time the example that we discussed last time basically gave you some of the background on the issues involved in Bayesian learning, and the fact that basically Bayesian learning is really just an inference, and as long as you keep track of the priors and posteriors, a prior on the hypothesis, and then when you see the data, you are updating the posterior, updating the posterior of the hypothesis. And then once you are given a prediction task, then you essentially ask each hypothesis what it would predict for that value, and you are taking the expected value over that. Okay. In fact, what's more interesting, in fact, is while here in this last one, while I just showed the prediction, the expected value of the prediction, in fact, the predicted value itself has a distribution. Okay, because the hypothesis has a posterior, and each hypothesis gives a value to the prediction, then you essentially have a distribution for the prediction itself. Okay, and because of which, not only do you know the value you are predicting, but you know the variance of the prediction, the standard, you know, and the third order movement of the prediction. You essentially have full information about not just what you're predicting, but how sure you are. That's in Bayesian learning. Okay, so keep that in mind, and I'm going to sort of repeat that to some extent today, and then basically get into some actual specifics of statistical learning, especially Bayes network learning. Okay, so let's go into that step by step. So basically, the idea of the main idea in statistical learning is density estimation. Okay, so given some data whose instances are made up of, let's say, some attributes that are distributed according to some unknown distribution, okay, you are trying to get an estimate of p dash. This is the most general problem. Once you get p star, then you can do everything. Okay, for example, let's say the data has, you know, one of the things, you know, when you look at it that way, you essentially look like, so the data has x1, x2, etc., xn values. Those are the attributes. And they're all basically, they're being generated by this distribution. And I only got, it's an unknown distribution. I only got the example data points, and I'm trying to figure out what is the underlying distribution. Now, if you think of this and you're wondering where is classification learning, for example, okay? What actually happens in classification learning is this whole thing really is, actually I should probably write this, although not in Excel, so it's like the way I wrote it there is psi 1, psi 2, psi n, right? In classification learning, you essentially assume that there are some of these are actually input variables, x1, x2, etc., xm, and some, the rest are output variables, y1, etc., up to yk. Okay, basically then what you are interested in that scenario is I'll give you these and you are supposed to predict these. notice that this is a special case of this. Here, I can give you any of these excites and you can predict the rest of the excites. Okay? In particular, in fact, one of the interesting things is if I have access to P star psi, I can use it in all sorts of things. I can predict, for example, if you give me x1, etc. up to xn, and you want the values of y1 to yk, I can predict what those values could be. I can actually predict distributions of those values. Okay? Furthermore, I can also say if you give me some of the xi's and some of the yi's, and then there are certain things that I don't know, incomplete data, you can predict the incomplete data, including the input and output variables. There's no difference in input and output. And finally, you can actually generate data given this distribution. Okay, you can generate, you know, pseudo data given this distribution. And then because you can generate data with this distribution, one other interesting thing is if I give you a bunch of data after you learned the model, if I give you a bunch of data and ask you, do you think it's like real data? You can actually check the likelihood of the data given this distribution. How likely is that this distribution would have generated this data? And if that is lower than some threshold, you would say there is anomaly in this data. Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you probably, if you have thought of machine learning before, you would have thought of it in terms of classification. Okay, but I'm saying that if you learn the density, then everything else is just a special case. If you have the density function in front of you, then you can predict just the y values, which would be classification. You can also predict x as well as y values, which will be completion. You can also generate data. And because you can generate data, if somebody else gives you data, you can tell whether that could have been generated by your distribution. And if it's low likelihood of that being generated by your distribution, then it's made up data. Do you see what I'm saying? So we will, by focusing on density estimation, you get all of these. But then later on, actually, we will see in a minute that, in fact, if you know for sure in a particular problem, you will never be asking me to complete or to generate. All you will ever ask me is classification. Then, in some sense, learning density is an overkill. Do you understand what I'm saying? If you learn the density, you can do completion as well as generation. But if all you wanted was to generate yi, okay, then what I would do is I would not actually learn the p star psi, but I'm sorry, I should actually show you that. What I should learn instead is this distribution, p of yi given xi. The conditional distribution yi given xi. Okay, and if you just learn that would be called discriminative learning. We'll talk about this again a little later. The more general case is learning the generative model for the data. If you do generative learning, then you can do everything. But sometimes, you know, basically it's an overkill. Okay, whereas if you happen to know that I'll only ask you questions on this, you may as well just learn the conditional density of y given x. Okay, and we will see later on that one of the things that's advantageous in doing this, the reason this is a simpler learning problem, is if you just learn this, you are no longer learning the dependencies between xi's themselves. Okay, if all you have is this, you will be able to tell me yi values given xi values. But you will not be able to tell me missing xi values given the rest of xi and yi values. You also cannot generate the data. So discriminative learning is actually a special case, and it has efficiency advantages. When you know, the problem you have is a simple problem, you just want to do that. Okay, but mostly we'll focus on generative learning because that's a more general problem. Yes. That, yeah, you could think about it that way. In this particular case, yes. Okay. Yeah. So that's because you decided somehow that these are the class variables, this is the input variable. But, you know, one of the interesting things about this is I can learn a generative model for the emails in your mailbox. Now, what is the class of the emails? That's not necessary. I just know I would be able to, once I learn the distribution density function, then I should be able to generate a random email that when you look at it, you would agree, that looks like an email I would have got. That's it. Okay, and it's a much bigger problem than just learning spam versus non-spam. Okay, so we'll understand this problem, and oftentimes this is an overkill, so we'll also do some discriminative learning, but if you understand, this is useful. Yes.
Data set is comprised of vectors of our set of attributes psi.
Mm-hmm.
What is the reading of P star psi again?
That's the true distribution that you don't have access to. You assume that the data was actually generated by P star. Mm-hmm. And what you and you are trying to learn some you learn you're trying to learn P star, and you might actually wind up learning P dash, which is like the closest you can get to P star from the information you have.
So P star is essentially a function that maps a particular vector psi onto a class?
No, P star is a probability distribution, and you sample it, you'll get one data point. So think about it, like for example, think of P star as a particular Bayes network. And you can sample the Bayes network to generate a data point. Sample it again to generate another data point. Sample it again to generate another data point. I only gave you these data points. You are trying to learn the Bayes network. That's what it is.
So P star is a function that gives you the probability distribution for each attribute.
No, P star is the distribution. It's generating the data. P star is generating the data. Okay? Okay, now one of the interesting questions, of course, is if you're trying to learn, you know, P star, and, you know, obviously this is unknown, and you're going to learn some estimate of it using some P dash, the question is how are you going to represent your P dash? Okay, there are all sorts of ways of doing it. In particular, actually, in statistics, there is this idea called non-parametric versus parametric. Okay, especially if you have continuous distributions. If you have a point, if discrete distributions, then you can just say, I will learn the table. I will learn the table, you know, corresponding to how this data is generated. Okay, if it's a continuous distribution, you might, for example, say, I would go ahead and assume that it's a normal distribution. So then I just have to learn the parameters for the normal distribution. I made a huge jump there when I said, I assume that it's a normal distribution. In the past, for this kind of data, normal distribution was the generative process, so I'll just assume it's normal distribution. If I'm looking at the traffic arrival on the roads, for example, and then I'm trying to learn the density function for the traffic arrival rates, if you assume normal distribution, that won't be good. You just assume Poisson distribution. Okay? If you are trying to learn the densities, a density for how popular different pages on the web would be, assuming normal distribution would be really, really wrong. You have to assume a power law distribution and find the right parameters for the power law. Okay, assuming normal distribution is like, I give you data like this, and then you assume I'm looking for a line here. You will find a line. There is a line. Okay, and in fact, even if my data was generated by a nice sine wave, I can find a line. Okay, if you're looking for one, you will find it always. The question, of course, is what's the right one to look at? Okay, a parametric one thinks that I'm looking for a line, or I'm looking for a second order polynomial, or I'm looking for a normal distribution. Okay, a non-parametric one says, let the data just tell me what its histogram is. Okay, in this class, mostly we will focus on Bayes networks and Markov networks as the representations of the distribution, because they wind up being, unlike just, you know, normal distributions or Poisson distributions, Bayes networks provide a bigger machinery for compactly representing large joint distributions, large multivariate joint distributions. Okay? Are Bayes networks parameterized? Yes. Because they have a topology and they have a conditional distribution, you know, that you have to provide for each point. You know, so if you have, okay, by the way, I assume that all of you know Bayes networks. Is there anyone here who doesn't know Bayes networks? Then you need to read. Okay. If you don't know Bayes networks, you are going to be in major disadvantage. You need to understand, because as of end of today's class onwards, I'll assume you know Bayes networks, and then you should definitely be ready with them. Yes? Pure Bayes networks. Okay. And in the sense that it's a Bayes network. I don't necessarily say there is a causal direction. It's just a representation for the probability distribution. Okay. So for example, if I have a Bayes network like this, then I know that I need to give a CPT for B given A here. I need a PB given A here. I need a PC given A here. And I need a PD given B and C here. Okay? Now these you could learn either as parameterized version or non-parametric version. If it's discrete, it's easy to learn non-parametric. In fact, we will start with non-parametric, because for discrete cases, you can just learn the table. If it's continuous, it becomes much harder. You need to, you know, when you have a continuous scenario, then you need to somehow, you know, talk about what are all the distributions you're considering. Okay? So if it is continuous, then typically you will try to say things like it's a conditional normal, a conditional Gaussian, and then you learn the parameters for that, for example. Okay? Anyway, so that's the reason why we get into Bayes networks and maybe Markov networks. They are the way you will represent the distribution you are learning. Do you understand what I'm saying? And all the learning you did of Bayes networks and Markov networks, they were always presented to you as, I mean, Bayes networks, that, you know, definitely most of you know. And they were presented to you as compact ways of representing multivariate distributions. Okay? Fine. So that's the point of statistical learning. Are there any questions on this before I go forward? Okay, now I go back to my old slides, the first slide I showed last class, which is full Bayesian learning. So here I'm trying to learn this P star psi, what I would try to do essentially is, so when I have data, then basically I have a hypothesis variable, and I assume there is a prior on the hypothesis variable, and I assume that so prior on the hypothesis variables, and then I have the data that I have looked at, and for each hypothesis I can give the likelihood of the hypothesis given that I have seen the data. Okay, that's the posterior on the hypothesis. Okay, and so where this PD given HI, this one is the probability that data holds given that HI is the hypothesis generating it. Okay, and so I convert the likelihood into the posterior over the hypothesis, and then given this, when I have prediction, I essentially have to, I will be considering the predictions made by all the distributions and weighted sum of them. Okay, so now in this picture, where is my learned distribution? Where is my learned density? So I came here from here, right? I was trying, there is a known, you know, a particular density that was actually generating the data, and I'm trying to learn the density. Okay. In Bayesian learning, so where is this density function? So connect this slide to this slide in your head. So what are the hypotheses here? What are you trying to learn? What we are trying to learn is the distribution. So what are the hypotheses? Different distributions. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, so this should blow your mind. When I said P of H, this is the prior over the different distributions. Okay, so if, for example, you know, if I think that the distribution, you know, that if you're basically, so So the idea is you're looking at P star psi. This is what you're trying to learn. You're trying to learn some best estimate for it. Suppose I'm trying to learn, let's say, the best normal distribution that might fit the P star. Now the normal distribution has two different parameters, the mean and the variance. Okay? For every different mean and variance, I have a unique normal distribution. So then P of H would be a joint distribution over mean and variance of the normal distribution. Once I give you the mu and sigma, okay, then I will know the specific normal distribution, and with respect to that, I can compute the likelihood of the data. Based on that, now I compute the new joint distribution over mu and d, mu and sigma. Do you understand this? So what we are learning in Bayesian learning is there is no learning in Bayesian learning. You maintain a distribution over the different distributions that could have generated the data. And so you never actually pick a winning P dash. This is what I was telling you last time. You never pick a winner in Bayesian learning. If a winner gets picked, it's exactly because the P of H given D winds up, let's say, becoming very peaked. Suppose, you know, if it's a normal distribution, if you're looking at a family of normal distributions, let's say, then it's a two-dimensional joint distribution on mu and sigma. Right? If after seeing enough data, you actually, the posterior that you found has a very strong peak at mu equal to 0.1 and sigma equal to 0.7, then in essence, that was the learned single distribution. But Bayes learner itself never makes up its mind. It just says all of these are possible hypotheses for the distribution, the density that generated the data, and each of them are giving these different labels for the data, and then I will compute the expected, then I can compute the distribution of the prediction itself, and once I have the distribution, I can compute the mean, variance. Mean is just the expected value, the variance and everything. Okay? This is the hard part to understand in Bayes learning, in the sense that this P of H, in, you know, the thing that we did last time, we basically had simple discrete set of hypotheses. All red, all lime, all green, I'm sorry, all lime and all cherry, 30% cherry, 30% lime, etc. There are only five hypotheses. Those were the there were only five distributions you were allowing. Okay? But normally you may not have that much of background knowledge. So normally what you might think is, I think the data is probably normal distributed. Or I think the data is probably Poisson distributed. Then the question is, what are the parameters? And the P of H is giving you the distribution over the parameters. Okay? And as the data comes in, you are computing the posterior on the distribution of the parameters. And you're using all the parameters and all the hypotheses to predict the data. This is why there's no learning in Bayes learning. Okay? Now all the approximations to Bayes learning will wind up actually picking a winner. And they will look more like what you thought of when you saw this, which is you're trying to kind of get some P dash estimate. Okay, Bayesian learning itself won't pick a winner. Okay, so no need to pick one best guess hypothesis, and nothing special about learning, just vanilla probabilistic inference. Okay, the problem is, how do you maintain P of H? If I at least figure out that this is just a normal distribution, then my P of H would be a joint distribution over mu and sigma. So it will be a two-dimensional joint distribution over mu and sigma. If I think it's a multivariate normal distribution, then it's a n-dimensional joint distribution over the covariances and the mu vector. Okay? So to handle, to not make up your mind, you know, this base network, base learning is least commitment oriented learning. It doesn't commit to a particular winner, which also means it has to drag along every hypothesis. Okay, and it becomes pretty hard, especially, in fact, when you have to learn non-parametric, when you have to do non-parametric learning. That means you don't want to say it's a Gaussian distribution. So when you don't say it's a Gaussian distribution even, then the parameters are no longer finite. So you now have infinite number of, possibly infinite number of parameters. And then you need to provide a distribution over infinite number of parameters. That's a pretty hard stuff. In fact, there is a whole direction that's going on called Bayesian non-parametric, which we probably won't talk about at all. It basically tells you how to do Bayes learning, which is not doing learning at all, you know, keeping everybody around, when you don't even have any bias over the parametric form of the distribution. Okay, so, you know, things like, if you have heard out of this, either before or after this class, if you have heard things like Gaussian processes, any of you heard Gaussian processes? That's basically a way, a technical way of providing distribution over infinite parameter space. Okay, but mostly if you have parametric learning, still, it's a hard, just a second. Even if you have parametric learning, it's a pretty hard situation because you still have to keep track of all the, you have to keep track of the P of H. That's the prior and the posterior of the hypothesis as the data comes in. And as a plus point of that, you never have to pick a winner, and the very best case scenarios for Bayes network in particular are that, suppose, based on the data, about 8 hypotheses are equally likely. And they all give conflicting predictions to your particular data point. A winner-take-all thing will just kill you because you're likely to be just 1/8 wrong, 1/8 right. Whereas if you consider all of them and then figure out the what's the expected value as well as the distribution of the prediction, then you can do much better. Okay, and so that's the advantage that you get for Bayes network, Bayesian learning. But to be able to do that, you need to handle distribution over hypothesis. And remember that distribution over hypothesis means distribution over distributions, because we're trying to learn densities. P of H is density over densities. Okay, in the case of parametric learning, it just becomes density over the parameters that define the density. So mu and sigma, if it's a normal distribution. And if it's a CPT table, then it will be defining the distribution of those Bernoulli parameters that we'll see in a minute. Okay, yes.
If you were to say, guess what form your distribution has, then you're only
exactly
as the thing of it, your hypothesis. If you were to then find, for example, the maximum likelihood,
let's talk about maximum likelihood. I'm going to talk about it in a minute.
But it would be essentially equivalent to solving the density estimation problem, right?
Why don't you keep that question? Let me complete this and then ask me again. Okay, so this is full Bayesian learning, and it has its advantages, it has its disadvantages. Okay, the problem is that in Bayesian, so one idea is that you don't want to keep holding the entire set of hypotheses. Especially in the inference time, you need to use this possibly infinite number of hypotheses and ask each of them what is your prediction, and you will get a distribution for the prediction itself. I didn't want distribution, I just want a number. I just want, tell me yes or no. I don't want to know anything more. Okay, I don't want any nuanced answers. Then I can do map approximation, where what I'll basically do is remember that to compute, to predict X given the data that you have seen. So basically this is the problem that you're facing. predict a new X, new data point, given all the data points you have seen. And you did that by mediating it over the hypothesis. Okay, so you will predict X given D and HI, and H, probability of HI given D, and then the D and HI, you know, it turns out that basically you assume that if you are given the hypothesis, then the data doesn't matter. Okay, so then it will be X given HI and HI given D, and if it's a discrete space, you just do summation. If it's a continuous space, you actually have to do integration. Okay, now what I will do is, rather than do either the summation or integration, I will take a point estimate of this summation. And I'll just say, I'll only consider the part of this whole sum for which HI given D, for which this whole piece is the largest. So remember, this is, let's say if it's a discrete thing, this could be sum of, let's say, 25 terms. I'm just going to pick the maximum term among those 25 terms. And I will say, whichever is the hypothesis that makes the term, that gave that term, I'll assume that is actually the density. So now I picked a winner. And so now during inference, I no longer have to handle all the hypotheses. During inference, I no longer have to handle all the hypotheses because I have picked a hypothesis, a specific one. Okay? So, and in particular, actually, you can make sense of what you're doing. So you're trying to pick HI such that it maximizes this part, D given HI times PHI. Because remember that you're looking at the sum of this, and you're looking for the term in this sum which is the largest. That would be the one for which this sum, this multiplication, this product is the highest, the HI for which this multiplication is the highest. Okay? So you're trying to maximize this. Okay, and if you're trying to maximize this, that's like maximizing the log of this, right? I mean, if you're maximizing a function, you're also maximizing the log of the function because log of them is monotonic. Okay, and so that basically means you are actually looking for something which maximizes log of p d given hi plus log of p hi. That's a very nice form. What that says is you want the hypothesis that has the maximum likelihood, that gives the maximum likelihood for the data. That means if this was the hypothesis, this data would have been produced with the highest probability. Do you see what I'm saying? Plus, also, what is the prior for that hypothesis? What is the prior for that hypothesis? Okay? And this total has to be maximum. So what's interesting is in this term, you know, so one of the interesting things here is this piece is essentially some sort of a complexity of the hypothesis. How likely is it that that hypothesis actually is the real one that generated the data? Okay, so one, this, by doing this, in essence, you are actually back to learning. That means you're back to picking a winner. But not only that, suppose, think about the following thing. Suppose I'm looking for something that generated this data, let's say. Okay? I could find something which looks like this. That generates the data. That gives the maximum likelihood for the data. Because every data point is actually on that curve. But if you pick such a curve, you would also say you overfit it to the data. Why? Because this is a very high order polynomial. You don't expect that the data would have been generated by such a high order polynomial. So in your own mind, you have a prior over the different polynomials that could have generated this data, which in essence gave little higher weightage to the line, and then the quadratic, then the cubic, then the higher order polynomials. Because of which, even though this gives 100% likelihood for, it gives the highest likelihood for the data, the second term for this particular one would be too low. Okay? Whereas something which probably looks more like this might very well wind up winning over this other hypothesis. because you're taking the prior of the hypothesis, and this one has a higher prior and lower likelihood, this one has a higher likelihood, lower prior. So you could very well pick this as the winner. Okay? So if you do map learning, you get to avoid overfitting. If you do Bayes learning, do you get to avoid overfitting? Yeah, the word overfitting doesn't exist in Bayes learning because you never picked a winner. So Bayes learning is what we all would like to do, essentially, if we had the ability to carry along all the entire set of hypotheses. You never have to make up your mind. You provide like a likelihood for all the hypotheses. When you are picking, then there could be problems like overfitting. Okay? And it matters that, in fact, this guy, map learning, actually at least ensures that the likelihood of the hypothesis, prior likelihood of the hypothesis, is used in picking which is the winner. But what it does lose with respect to Bayesian network, I mean with respect to Bayesian learning, is we can no longer quantify the variance of our prediction. Once you pick the winner basically, like, you know, like I always felt in 2000 election, 50% of the time George Bush should be running the country and 50% of the time Gore should be running the country. They were so darn close. Just a few hundred votes. Okay, a Bayesian would have allowed that. So the morning, maybe, you know, Bush apparently is a very early riser. So in the morning he would be making the decisions and then Gore could be making the decisions in the night. That's what Bayesian learner would do. There is no winner takes all for Bayes learner. And more interestingly for us, if there are two hypotheses which are close to being equally likely, but one of them is slightly better than that, so there is like a bimodal distribution for the hypothesis space, one of them just edges out the other guy, and these guys are giving conflicting predictions to particular data point you have. Now, once I pick the winner, I can't any longer go back and say, what would Gore have said? Do you see what I'm saying? Gore is no longer in the picture. Okay, if both of them are there, then you can ask, like, on this particular question, what do you say? And if both of them agree, that's a bigger decision than both of them agree or disagree, that's one decision. Both of them agree with, you know, whether to do something or not, that's given higher priority, then only one of them agree to do something. Okay, and you can actually say, well, I have this label, in the Bayesian learning, I can say I have this label and it's also, this is the variance. Whereas I don't know what the variance is anymore because I have a winner right now. That's what you lose by not doing Bayesian learning. Okay? Yes?
So if you, for example, say pick the higher order polynomial, which gives you the strange curve at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
Is your hypothesis essentially the coefficients of all the, what the coefficients of all the terms would be in that polynomial?
Hypothesis is the... No, okay. So I'm using these pictures, but really I should be talking about distributions because the entire thing is about distributions. And what I need to say is really the right thing I should have done is, you know, there is a distribution which is impulse distribution. That means it gives non-zero probability to only those points. Okay? In that case, only those points would be generated. Okay? I use the hypothesis, this thing, because you have more intuitions about curve fitting. But really what you're doing here is distribution fitting, not curve fitting, which is slightly more subtle. Okay? So that's the map approximation. Okay? And in doing map, basically, this is what sort of, I mean, there's a reason why people want to do this, because they want to have a winner. So that if there are like, you know, if everybody who ran for presidency gets elected, okay, with, you know, weighted coefficients, you know, your decision will have 0.7 weight, this one will have 0.3 weight, this one will have, 0.29, this one will have 0.001, etc. That sort of, you know, in some sense actually, in France and so on, for example, there is a true proportional representation. So for example, here, at least for a state, in the presidential elections, in a particular state, if you got one more constituency than the other guy, you get the entire state. At least most of the states work like that here. Okay? In France, for example, and I think it's also in Denmark, it's proportional representation. So across the country, they consider the percentage of votes each party got, and then they'll give them a number of seats proportional to the percentage of the votes they got. Okay, this also essentially means that parliamentary systems are typically very slow in making decisions because everybody has to talk. So inference becomes hard. Of course, you don't declare wars that easily, but on the other hand, it also day-to-day work becomes really slow. That's exactly what happens with Bayesian learning. And so map learning, you pick one example, one real distribution as one distribution as the winner. Okay, and among the distributions that are giving high likelihood, you pick essentially the one which has higher prior likelihood. Okay, and so this is sort of, you can think of this as things like Occam's razor. For example, the simplest hypothesis that fits the data. Occam's razor is a particular kind of prior over hypothesis. The other interesting way of thinking about this is, you know, remember, anytime you have a log of a quantity, you can think of it as the information content. For those of you who have information content, you know, Shannon information content. Okay, so log of PHI is the number of bits needed to just give the hypothesis, to spell out the hypothesis. And log of D given HI is the number of additional bits needed to spell out the data given the hypothesis. If the data is completely likely given the hypothesis, then this would be zero. Because PD given HI is one, log of PD given HI will be zero. So all that matters then is the complexity of the hypothesis itself. So in the case of MAP, you're taking, essentially you're taking the sum of the information content of the hypothesis itself. In some sense, a line has lower information content than a higher order polynomial. It requires lot more bits to specify. Okay? Plus, given that hypothesis, how many additional bits are needed to specify the data? And you need bits to specify the data only if the data is not actually following the hypothesis. If it completely follows the hypothesis, you don't need any more additional bits. And you are taking the sum of this and minimizing that, and maximizing it. Okay? So that's MAP. Exactly.
And the conditional probability is the accuracy
of the hypothesis. No, the conditional probability is the additional, well, yeah, sort of, you know, accuracy of the hypothesis, you know, given the data. Yes. Okay. So by here, your inference task is easy. The only other problem left is you still, by the way, the thing to understand in this case is, in essence, you did not go away from the need to keep the posterior distribution, the distribution over the hypothesis, because you needed the prior over the hypothesis space. Okay? If you don't want the prior, then you can do what's called ML approximation, where essentially you say, well, I'll just pick the hypothesis that maximizes this term, and I'll assume everybody here has the same. So imagine that your prior is flat. All hypotheses are equally likely. Then this term would be the same for every hypothesis. And so the only thing that decides the winner is the likelihood. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. So basically what ML, maximum likelihood, does is pick the hypothesis which maximizes just the data likelihood as the winner. Okay, among the hypotheses you're considering, pick the one that maximizes the data likelihood as the winner. That's it. Okay, now obviously in doing this, you no longer need prior over the hypothesis, because you know you're essentially, either you're ignoring the prior or you're assuming that the prior is flat. That means all hypotheses are equally likely up front. Okay. Now, if you do that, then if you just look at the hypothesis that maximizes the likelihood, notice that in that case, for example, between this hypothesis and this, you would have picked this. That's the risk you take. Okay? So in the case of maximum likelihood estimation, not only can't we quantify the variance of our prediction, because already MAP no longer knows how to quantify the variance of its prediction. Only Bayesian learning does. Okay? Not only can't we quantify the variance of our prediction, we also can fall prey to overfitting, because you don't really know, you know, which hypothesis is more likely, more complex versus less complex. So you only care about the hypothesis fit to the data, and that's asking for trouble, because overfitting is a problem in learning. Especially when you have low data scenarios, overfitting is very much of a problem, because you can always fit to just to the data. Okay, so that also actually says that MLE, maximum likelihood estimation based learning, winds up doing the same thing as the Bayesian learning and the large data case. In the intermediate data case, MLE would be bad. In the intermediate and small, MLE would be very different from what Bayesian learning would say. Okay, but in the intermediate data size, MAP learning might be closer to what Bayesian learning says. If you think Bayesian learning as the gold standard, MAP comes to Bayesian learning, MAP comes closer to Bayesian learning by about the intermediate data size. Okay, whereas MLE comes closer to Bayesian learning at the large data size. Now I said intermediate and large. What is intermediate? What is large? Qualitative. Okay, if I hope that the data I have is large enough, then I'm essentially assuming that, you know, whatever MLE said is pretty much what Bayes learning would have said. Nobody ever actually does Bayesian learning as well as MLE and compares the values, except for toy problems. It's a road not taken. Once you do not do Bayesian learning, you haven't taken that road. You just need some kind of a theorem, hoping that, you know, you can sleep well in the night, and if you convince yourself that the data is large enough, I should be fine, you'll be okay. Now, one interesting scenario that we will see in learning Bayes networks is, we'll see that one particular scenario is, you know that there's a Bayes network, but you don't know the topology. Suppose the data is given, data points are, let's say, on X, you know, E1 to EN, and those are the only attributes. And so Bayes network has those attributes in its network configuration, but you don't know the topology. The interesting thing then is, basically topology means the arrows. Okay? It turns out that we can show that as you increase, suppose you have a Bayes network, BN1, and then you added a couple more links to BN1 to get BN2. That means you didn't remove any link, you just added links. You can show that the likelihood of the data cannot be lower for BN2 than it is for BN1. What does that mean? That means you are just going to learn completely connected Bayes networks all the time. Okay? So then what do you say? That basically means MLE will just kill you. So then you would basically do fudge factors. When you learn topology for Bayes networks, you put fudge factors saying complexity of the network. Now where is this complexity of the network coming? That was supposed to be the prior over the network configurations. So you can ignore it sometimes, but when you have things like you know, topology, then it will finally come and bite you. So Bayes network topology learning software, all of them, you know, even if they say they are doing MLE, they do actually MAP, because they have to provide some score to hit, you know, more complex networks on the head. Otherwise, the more complex network will always be more giving higher likelihood to the data than the less complex network. When I say more complex, means it has all the edges of this network plus more. And if you keep adding like this, you will reach completely connected Bayes network. Okay, yes. Exactly. Prior is the big difference between ML and MAP. Prior over hypothesis. And what you're talking about domain dependent is really background knowledge. Mm-hmm. Okay? There is religious war that will answer all your questions plus more. Okay, so let me complete this and then you can ask this question. So we talked about basically base learning, the map approximation and the ML approximation. And you know that ML is the easiest thing to do because you only have to compute the likelihood and maximize with respect to the likelihood. You know that map is next easy thing to do because you need to now consider both the prior and the likelihood. And you know that the right thing to do is Bayesian learning. At least that's what I try to convince you. If only you had the ability to handle all the hypotheses together, the right thing to do is Bayesian learning. That's the gold standard, right? Whatever I said, a statistician in this room would say, what balderdash, completely made up. This is not the way statistical learning is supposed to happen. Because the word statistical learning is a new age word. Okay, statistics existed for a long time as a well-regarded discipline. Okay, and statisticians have always talked about statistical inference. And they just didn't call it learning. Okay, so statisticians were solving the same problem that we are trying to solve here. And, you know, not surprisingly, when people in, like, you know, when people who are now, who are part of machine learning now, okay, have gotten onto the field, there was religious wars between statisticians and machine learning people, in particular because there was religious wars within statistics itself. Okay, there is a religious war between, let's say, America and UK because there were also already religious war in UK and some people left UK and came here. And then they started their own little country, big country. Okay, so it's interesting to understand, so that the big religious war that you want to understand, because you keep hearing about it all the time, is the Bayesian learning versus frequentist learning. Whatever I told you until now is Bayesian learning. Okay, I started from Bayesian learning and I came up with things like MAP and MLE for computational reasons. Not because I believe those are the right things to do, but because I'm too lazy to do the right thing. And one of the interesting things we'll see is frequentist learners will actually say that what you thought was the right thing to do is actually the wrong thing to do. And what you wound up doing for laziness is the right thing to do. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? And that's the interesting part. And let's understand what's going on. So the biggest difference between Bayesian and probabilistic and frequentist learning comes from the definition of probability. The very beginning. Okay? The definition of probability for the frequentist learning is your elementary school math definition of probability, which is a probability is an objective quantity which corresponds to an asymptotic frequency of an event, which when it is repeated many, 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 many times, that's the frequency it will tend to. Okay, that's what frequentists think. Bayesians, on the other hand, think that probabilities are just degrees of belief. You have a degree of belief, you just say that. Okay, for example, if I ask the question, what's the probability that Einstein drank a cup of tea at 4:13 p.m. on February 26, 1920? That's my question. What's the probability according to your model? Okay? A Bayesian would say, I believe it's 0.4. I mean, me, I'll say I believe it's 0.4. You hate tea, you say, I think it's 0.01. And somebody else, think Einstein was a drunkard, he never was drinking tea, he would have had a martini, so it's zero. Okay? So it's based on your beliefs, you will give a number. I cannot question your number. What I can question then is that if you really believed that Einstein is a drunkard and so would never drink, tea, then if you gave him like a big bag of Darjeeling tea for his birthday, then I would say, what the heck are you doing? Are you trying to kind of, diss him off, or are you really thinking that this guy would drink this? So what Bayesians say is, you can have degrees of belief. Your degrees of belief might be different from my degrees of belief. And your rationality would be judged based on your degrees of belief. My rationality would be judged based on my degree of belief. If I'm a flat earth guy, I shouldn't say I will go around the world. Because I would fall off the world. when I try to go around it. Okay? Whereas a non-flat earth guy can say, then they can go around the world. So you should be consistent with your belief. That's what Bayesian says. It's a very laissez-faire, you know, probabilities. You can make up any numbers you want. Okay? And this is why it's extremely important in the Bayes networks, you are not allowed to make numbers that will violate the axioms of probability theory. So I'll only ask you numbers such that given your numbers, there'll always be a consistent joint distribution. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay, that's very important. That happens in Bayes network construction. Okay, whereas frequentists say for the same problem, can say, I don't know, this is not a repeatable event. Okay, how can I compute the frequency of this? How many times do you get February 26, 1920, 4:13 p.m.? Only once. And I have no way of actually giving a number to this. There's no experiment, so there's no way of giving a number to this. So that's the level of objectivity they have, and that's the level of subjectivity these guys have. Because of which, so now given that, the second point is Bayesians essentially think that a hypothesis is a random variable. During learning, a hypothesis is a random variable. And so since it's a random variable, you can provide your degree of belief over which hypothesis is more likely versus less likely. When you provide a prior for the hypothesis, that's your personal belief that the world is made up of straight lines. So any data is there, I'll put it straight line because that's what I believe in. And if you are more of a sine wave kind of a guy, you will give much higher preference to sine waves. That's your preference. Okay, so Bayesians have no problem in thinking about prior of the hypothesis. Once you have the prior of the hypothesis, because hypothesis is a random variable, you can talk about a prior, and you can update the prior to compute the posterior. Okay, now frequentists, on the other hand, think there is a true hypothesis. It's not a random variable. And if it's not a random variable, you cannot have a distribution. So frequentists, and this is basically, if you take, you can take a machine learning course, which is more like this, or a statistical inference course given in math department, which is more like this. They're trying to solve the same problem, but they have different religious beliefs. And the religious war has not concluded yet. Okay? It looks as if this side has now a fighting chance. For a while, in fact, this side didn't even have a fighting chance. Okay? Okay, so there is a true hypothesis. So hypothesis is not a random variable, and you cannot have a distribution. Okay? Once you can have a prior distribution from the Bayesian side, the hypothesis prior is your belief about which hypotheses are more or less likely. Okay? So, you guys know that Einstein did not particularly like quantum mechanics, right? So, he would keep going around saying, God doesn't play dice with the universe. That's his way of saying the right hypothesis as to how the universe works will not have quantum mechanics as part of the hypothesis space. So he's putting prior to be zero for the entire quantum mechanical theories. Okay? And then Niels Bohr would say, stop telling God what to do. Niels Bohr is a frequentist. You know, he actually had said to Einstein, stop telling God what to do. Let him do what he wants to do. And we'll figure out what he's trying to do rather than telling him what to do. Okay, and in fact, if you understand these two, this is in some sense the difference between Bayesian and frequentist learning. Frequentists don't have, would like to argue that they should not have prior. Having a prior is cheating, is being prejudiced. You're being prejudiced about what the God is supposed to be doing. You should let the data speak for itself. Okay. This is the major difference between frequentist and Bayesian learning. This is what you do in classical statistics courses, even today. And this is what you do in statistics departments. There are a few people who call themselves Bayesians, and they glare at each other, and the Bayesians glare at the frequentists and vice versa. And it's great fun. One time I was in this workshop where there was a bunch of statisticians, some Bayesians, some frequentists, and a bunch of machine learning people who are all Bayesian, more or less. And, you know, I was sitting there thinking, why the heck are these guys actually hitting each other almost? I mean, you know, they were really, really passionate about their objections to each other. Okay? So normal statistics books will find all sorts of problems that you will get into when you try to have a prior. For example, one interesting thing they'll say is, suppose you have a prior, where do you get the prior? And suppose you don't know what, where, you know, what the right prior is, you might say, I'll just assume flat prior. Flat prior means uniform prior. Now, first of all, you cannot have flat in an infinite space, because then it won't be a probability measure, because the integral will not be finite. Okay, that's a problem already. You cannot actually have flat prior over an infinite space if you have infinite, hypothesis. Okay, further, on top of that, even if you said you were a flat prior, suppose then I would actually consider some function of the parameters. Okay, suppose I say, you know this, right? Suppose I have x1 which has a uniform distribution between 1 and 10, x2 which has a uniform distribution between 1 and 10. If I add x1 plus x2, that's a random variable. What is its distribution? Wake up and start thinking of probabilities. What is it? Triangular. X1 plus x2 would be triangular distribution. And it will go from 1 to 20, with the 10 being the highest likelihood. So now, their point, you know, these guys will say, look, we got you now. Okay, you said you didn't know anything. That's why you went with flat. But if you didn't know anything, how come you know something about x1 plus x2? If you don't know anything about x, how come you know more about the functions of x? And if you have priors, like, you know, for example, flat priors are essentially not invariant with respect to these kinds of translations. And so then the statistical textbooks will say, okay, we'll let you have priors. We'll find out for you priors that have invariant, that are invariant. There is actually an idea called Fisher information content. And you can use Fisher information content as the prior, in which case it will at least be translation invariant. Okay, but that's from this guy's side. These guys saying, look, you know, we got you. And then what are these guys going to say? These guys are going to say, what the heck are you going to do if you do not have enough data? If you just have a couple of pieces of data. And the furthermore, how are you going to use your background knowledge? Where in the place are you going to put your background knowledge? Okay? And so Bayesians will say, you know, background knowledge is always there in any realistic problem, and that's why you need to do, you need to be able to use priors over hypotheses. Okay, so thankfully, one of the interesting things is both camps agree on maximum likelihood estimate based learning, but for different reasons. Bayesians will say, Emily, that's just a poor man's way of doing learning. Now, intellectually inferior man's way of doing learning. We can at least see where MLE is coming from. Okay, it's coming from starting with the true Bayesian learning, then taking the map, then even ignoring the prior, assuming flat prior. Then you will get MLE. And so I know that if you use MLE today, then we know exactly how wrong or right you are in our own framework. And when the data is large, then you guys will do the same thing that the true Bayesian learning will do. When the data is small, you will be sunk, but what can you do? You are intellectually lazy, you should be sunk. That's what a Bayesian would say. Okay? But we'll let you do MLE. A statistical learning guy will say, good that you finally got out of this hang-up with priors over hypothesis, which is a nonsensical thing. You are not supposed to have priors over hypothesis. Okay? There is no hypothesis, not a random variable. So finally, you're doing the right thing. You're doing just likelihood with respect to the data. But just don't say PD given H. If you write PD given H, according to our Bible of probability, H is a random variable. You cannot condition anything on a non-random variable. Since H is not a random variable, thou shalt not write this. Thou shalt write this. So in fact, the syntactic difference you will see between a statistical learning textbook and a machine learning text, a Bayesian learning textbook, is a surplus of semicolons. Statisticians will put semicolon where they, because they would not put a conditioning. And the reason is, it's a religious reason. Do you understand? In different religions, for example, I believe in Christianity, in different religions, Christ is either considered God or not God. Okay? You know, in one case, he's considered God, in the other case, he's just considered the Son of God, who may or may not be God. Okay, and so certain things can or cannot be said in the theosophical texts of those two different sects of religion. And that's what we have now. Okay, so hypothesis is not a random variable. So you can do max. So these guys do MLE because that's the only right thing to do. These guys will do MLE because if you are intellectually lazy, once in a while you can get by with just MLE. Okay, so not surprisingly, much of the MLE-based learning techniques would have the same derivations in a statistical learning textbook and a Bayesian or machine learning textbook, except all the conditionals are replaced by semicolons. And you know, people who don't understand this crazy religious war would be thinking, why are you doing this? You know, what's the big hang up over semicolons versus conditionals? It really is a philosophical distinction. They don't believe a hypothesis is a random variable in one case. Okay, yes, and we'll come back. Yeah. By the way, it's not just statistics, frequentist statistics. And by the way, frequentists and Bayesians exist in statistics already.
Yep.
It's just like Puritans existed in UK too. It's just that more of them came off here. Right? And so over a period of time, we somehow thought America is more puritanical than UK, but you know, Puritans exist in UK too. And similarly, Bayesians exist in pure statistics community too. It's just that a whole bunch of them separated themselves into quote-unquote machine learning. And so machine learning part of the statistics mostly is Bayesian. Yeah.
Let me say, can we compare chi-square tests or goodness of fit tests in frequency learning in the to find prior
so
similar to here?
So first of all, that's a good point. And in some sense, actually, again, you're going into more detail than I can expect anybody else here to understand, unless they have done statistical inference. I assume you did, you know. But in general, for example, things like confidence intervals are provided in statistical learning. Okay, variance is provided in true Bayesian learning. Okay, they wind up being practically of similar uses. Okay, the big difference is actually confidence interval is not a probability because you cannot make a statement about the confidence interval is not a probability statement about the hypothesis, because hypothesis is a true God. It knows what it is, and you can't assume that it's randomly changing. The interval itself is your probability estimate. So there's an interesting technical point to be made that a confidence interval essentially is a probabilistic interval which just happens to capture the true hypothesis.
But what we can do is, for example, start with a chi-square test. I mean, then improve our hypothesis or our belief by Bayesian learning. For example, say.
No, but I mean that's basically. Then at some point of time, you are trying to allow hypothesis to be a random variable. That's a big difference. You know, statistical. There is a good reason. Statistical learning was done where you are supposed to look for pattern in the data without any prior knowledge. And so it was right to not allow prior knowledge into the calculations. Okay. Whereas in a overall learning scenario, there is place for this. There is also place for small data learning where if you don't use your background learning, you cannot actually do any useful learning at all.
Even they do, in the most basic goodness of fit test, they say, okay, let's try like normal distribution and also let's try like maybe Poisson distribution.
I know, but the point is, again, I think the point is similar to what I was making earlier, which is there are people who say that they're doing MLE and they're doing MLE approach to topology learning. And then normally, if you take them at their word, MLE approach to topology learning should just degenerate into complete topology. Okay, and so they will allow from the side some various scores, saying let's give some score, you know, based on the complexity of the hypothesis. But that score makes no sense within that in MLE framework. It does have a meaning in the MAP framework. Similarly, if you are actually trying, let's try this versus try this versus try this, you are essentially assuming the hypothesis itself is sort of a random variable. You just don't want to call it that. By the way, I cannot convince, actually, I mean, you know, it's like, this is a religious war. Okay, and if you are interested in it, by the way, you could look up on the videolectures.net Michael Jordan, who is actually a statistician and a machine learning guy, and I don't know how he sleeps in the night, but he has a lecture called Are You a Bayesian or a Frequentist? You should look at that. And that's a much more technical expose of, you know, the differing philosophies. But as far as this class is concerned, it's worth understanding, at least this difference. Okay. Now, I guess the last thing I get to do is, should I also, which side should we go? I've been saying that machine learning guys fall on this side, statistics fall on this side. The real question is it reasonable for machine learning guys to fall on this side? Okay, and the problem normally is, what happens, I mean, should you distrust priors? If you are an AI person, should you distrust priors? And the answer to that is, eventually, data should be able to override your prior beliefs. But if you have no prior beliefs whatsoever, you will need a large amount of data to come to any reasonable decision. Okay? So, from an AI perspective, you really cannot say, I would distrust priors. You have to allow priors over the hypothesis, because that's a way you talk about your background knowledge. All that I have known about this world has told me that when I get data for psychology experiments, there are always straight lines in the background. So then I just look for a straight line. In fact, there's a beautiful, I might actually send it to you, a pseudoscience article about how to find straight lines hidden in the data. And then, for example, they'll say, you know, how to find a straight line in the sine wave. You know, you just assume that all the peaks are all noise, and then you draw a line through the midpoints, and that's a straight line. Okay, so if you're looking for one, you will find it. And the interesting thing is, the background knowledge has given you those priors. Okay, if your prior is wrong, you will quickly come to a decision with even small data and might be wrong. But what else will you do if you only have small data? Okay. The thing, of course, is there is also evidence, at least people are trying to show that there is evidence, that human brain actually uses priors, different kinds of priors for different kinds of situations. Okay? So, for example, for two different kinds of questions, I cannot read this here. So, one question is about, amount of money that the richest versus the next richest person might have. The other question is about a different human lifespan. And you're making predictions. Now, when you're making predictions, for richness, if you assume that wealth is distributed in a normal curve, then you would come up with very different answers than if you assume that the wealth is distributed in a power law curve. And the there's an interesting article that is being said here, you can look it up. The kind of judgments humans seem to make can be explained in terms of they using a power law prior here versus a Gaussian prior here. That means they seem to know that for certain cases this is the prior, for certain cases this is the prior. Now, a symbolic guy among us would say, well, this is the background knowledge. You know that wealth in the world is distributed in such a way, according to the Pareto's law, where rich get richer, and with tax cuts even more. But Gaussian prior, on the other hand, is for many other things where, for example, independently distributed, many independent variables, when they are summed to make the variable of interest, they tend to have, because of the central limit theorem, they tend to have a Gaussian distribution. Okay, so that's your background knowledge that you are bringing to bear. Okay, so I'll stop here. Next class, we will talk about essentially dimensions of statistical learning and how to do, and then more importantly, our agenda for that for the rest of the semester would be, we'll focus on density estimation, we'll assume first that we look at Bayes networks as the representation for the density to be learned. And if we have extra time, we will look at Markov networks. And then we'll focus on MLE as the first approach we'll use. And if we have time, we'll explain how to do Bayesian learning. Okay, while we are doing MLE, you should remember that we are doing this because of intellectual laziness. And it'll work well for large data case. And then Similarly, one other pause we will look at later on is we will assume in the beginning that all the attributes are given up front. There are no hidden attributes. Whereas if there are hidden attributes, then it becomes a harder problem. It's a partial observability always makes life hard. Okay, and when there are these hidden attributes, one of the interesting questions is you can just make as many of the hidden attributes as you want. Nobody tells you what attribute is hidden. Okay, so the question then is what attributes are you going to assume exist? And normally the reason for that, if you remember your Bayes network discussions, when you put hidden nodes in a Bayes network, then the number of parameters reduces. If I have m nodes here and n nodes here and all m are affecting all n here, then I would need huge number of m times n number of, you know, conditional probabilities. Okay, now 2 power m times n number of conditional probabilities. Okay, whereas if I put one node in the middle such that all of those guys are affecting that node and that node is then affecting these nodes, then you reduce the number of conditional probabilities exponentially. So just by assuming structure, you reduce the number of things you have to learn. Okay, and we'll see how to use, but the problem of course is when there's a hidden variable, learning becomes harder because maximum likelihood estimation is hard to do because you don't actually know all the values for the data, all the attributes for the data. So this is what we'll be doing for the rest of the semester. We'll come back. Thank you.